kids today think they are special? Our guest says yes, and he says they are not, and they shouldn't think they are. I'm Joy Cardine, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest is a high school teacher and a dad, and he gave a controversial high school commencement address a couple of years ago when he told the graduating class of Wellesley High School in Massachusetts that they were not special. And he's turned that message and other advice into a book. We will talk about why kids think this and why he says it's not going to serve them well and what will, and welcome your questions and reactions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is David McCullough Jr., a longtime English teacher at Wellesley High School in Wellesley, Massachusetts. His 2012 commencement speech at the school, in which he told students, "You are not special," went viral worldwide. And he is the author of a new book based on that speech, "You Are Not Special and Other Encouragements." Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks a lot for being with us. Now, I'm not a parent, but I'm going to speak for all parents listening right now. Maybe other kids think they're, you know, entitled or exceptional or special, but mine really is.
Well, as he or she should be to a parent. It's when the kid goes out the door that problems might ensue. Imagine a teacher who thought one or two or three of his students was more important than any of the others, or a doctor who felt that way. Kids should absolutely walk out the door with great confidence and eagerness to encounter an interesting world, but I don't. When their notions of self-esteem are inflated, they start to feel a bit entitled, and that's when problems ensue.
Yeah. So, talk a little bit more. When you told the class you are not special, what were you telling them?
Well, first, it's important to understand the context. The "you're not special" riff happened at the beginning of the speech and was intended as a kind of droll teasing to get their attention. Far more important was the message, the second half of the speech, which was to encourage them to do what they do for purposes larger than themselves, to worry not so much about accolades or opportunities that might come from an endeavor, but to invest themselves because they believe in enjoying something.
Yeah, so the media glommed onto the "you are not special" part of it.
They did. Well, you know, the media likes sensationalism and controversy. You mentioned the controversy. There may have been controversy. There may have been criticism of what I said, but none of it ever reached me. I've gotten nothing but praise, compliments, and expressions of gratitude for what I said.
Right. Well, maybe it was. I did see the reaction of some young people behind you in a video of that speech. And while there was a young man really, you know, yucking it up and enjoying, you know, that portion where you were talking about how they were not special. But I saw a couple of furrowed brows, too.
These were, I really did think I was speaking just to the kids sitting in front of me. And they all know me quite well, and I know them well, and there's great affection going back and forth between us. It wasn't like I was some, you know, cold-hearted, thin-lipped doctrinaire guy who come in from the outside to wag a bony finger at them. That really wasn't my purpose at all. And they knew that. They know me. It was more along the lines of, you know, hey, you got some spinach between your teeth before you go out the door.
But you do think that you weren't trying to necessarily insult the entire class, but you were trying to get them to face reality that...
I was trying, yes, trying to prepare them for a world that won't care so much that they achieved all kinds of distinction and enjoyed great esteem in their community or in their family. You know, the commencement ceremony is a beginning. It's a celebration of a start. And so whatever distinction these kids might have achieved to that point really doesn't matter so much. In fact, the ceremony is designed to emphasize that. We put them in this ceremonial gown that eliminates any sense of individuality. They cross the stage in alphabetical order, not according to GPA or some other distinction they might have achieved. They were literally sitting on a level playing field. Each diploma looks exactly the same. All of which is designed to say, look, you're starting afresh, and we were releasing them to the wild. And I want them to thrive out there and not try to rest on accolades they achieved when they were 14.
Yeah. So what, though, is contributing to kids who think perhaps they are entitled? Why do kids, some kids, think they're entitled?
Gosh, there's a lot of factors. A lot of factors involved. All of them, or many of them, competing with one another, they feel, for admission to a prestigious college. And they understand high school as simply a means of compiling an impressive resume and an impressive GPA. And they'll go to any length they can. They've also been raised in a manner that's kind of new, in my estimation, in the human experience. They've been everything has been designed to emphasize to them their preciousness and importance. To me, the perfect metaphor, the perfect symbol of it is the car seat. They're protected, they're driven, and they're aimed in one direction. Now, absolutely, a car seat is sensible, absolutely a car seat is important, but it does come at some cost. It limits their perspective. There's a lot of that going on.
Yeah.
And by the time they get to be 17, 18 years old, it has its impact.
So that's a part of this is due to over-parenting?
I think so, yeah. And well-meaning parents. And I'm as guilty as anybody else. My wife and I have four children, three of whom are teenagers. And we, Janice and I, are subject to the same cultural encouragements and temptations. And because I've been teaching high school for so long and I have teenagers at home, I kind of see this pretty clearly from both sides.
Yeah, and I mean, and you can't blame parents who want to make sure that their child is protected from harm, but also want their kids to have the very best advantage when it comes to the big bad world, and they want to make
precisely. Sure. And I think the temptation is to get involved sometimes when parents should not. They very eager to see their children enjoy all the cultural plums, so much so that rather than inspiring them to climb the plum tree or teaching them climbing technique, they're running out and buying stepladders, or they're pulling down the lower branches so the kid can reach them, or they're finding easier trees for the kids to climb. And for those of us charged with their education, this isn't necessarily the best approach. Kids need more independence. They need to be more willing to accept the possibility of failure. And when they do stumble and they do fall, it's important that they not think themselves failures, that they just think, okay, it didn't work out there. What can I learn from that experience? I think that kids need more freedom, more self-determination than they're being given these days.
Yeah, can you give us a real-life example as to how parents are pulling down the plum tree branch to give the kids plums?
Enrolling kids in SAT courses, hiring college application counselors. I read someone bolder than I saying that parents now are trying to circumvent Darwin, that they're trying to tutor and carry their kids to accolades they wouldn't achieve on their own. It happens all the time. the other day I saw a mother of a student of mine. She said, did you hear? And I said, no, what? She said, we got into college.
Oh.
And I thought, oh, isn't that interesting? Well, congratulations to you both.
Living through our kids, are we? Are you also, I don't know, do the parents come to you and demand that, you give Junior the A so he can get into a better college?
They don't demand, but sometimes if a kid doesn't perform well on something, the parent will ask for a retest or a rewrite. sometimes parents are helping children with their homework far more than they should. That kind of stuff, it happens all the time.
Yeah, and they're also, parents are overscheduling kids, or kids are overscheduling themselves.
Both, yeah, both. Many kids are involved in these fancy club sport teams, in fact, my own children included, and that puts demands on their academic part of their lives, too, because they've got they're going to miss a class here or miss a day of school there because they're off, in Phoenix at a soccer tournament or a fencing tournament. Kids are taking piano lessons. They're taking Mandarin lessons. They're taking SAT prep. Their kids are overburdened during school, and they're overscheduled after it, many kids. Yeah. And, in some senses, it's providing them very enriching experiences, but in others, it's just overtaxing them. And they're not allowed to be regular kids. For most of us, it's a statistical inevitability that we're average. The problem is that everyone wants to be deemed above average. And how can that be?
Well, so if the damage has already been done, what is the realization that perhaps you are not all that special? What's that going to do for a kid today when he's going to college or looking for that job?
Well, one fears that the realization will come with a cold slap in the face, and that they'll discover that people aren't necessarily that impressed by them, that when they were younger and should have been having these kinds of experiences that promote independence and self-reliance and independent thinking, that it'll just take a lot longer for them to evolve into fully capable adults.
And who do you hope? What do you hope readers take away from your book, You Are Not Special?
I hope they take some inspiration to take charge of lay the path of life for themselves, to do what they do because they believe in it and they enjoy it and see it will be of some benefit to others. I think the greatest satisfactions will lie there. I'd like to see them be more willing to risk things, to accept the possibility of failure. I'd like to see them read more. I'd like to see them be okay with being average, that there's nothing wrong with being a regular kid. In fact, it's honorable.
And is the intended audience the kid or their parents?
Well, thank you for asking. It was written for with teenagers in mind and anyone with an interest in them. I hope both teenagers and parents will have a look at it.
We are talking with David McCullough, Jr. He is the author of You Are Not Special and Other Encouragements. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions for him. How can teachers and parents help teenagers develop into thriving, independent adults? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Are you the parent of a teenager? Do you try to raise him or her with these ideas in mind? What would you tell a graduating high school class if given the chance? I don't think we have any teenagers listening to us right now, but if we do, hey, we'd love to hear from you too. Do you feel that you have been, I don't know, overburdened, overtaxed, overscheduled, and not allowed just to be an average, regular kid? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, talking this hour with David McCullough, Jr. He is the author of You Are Not Special and Other Encouragements. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We have a full line, so let's go right to the phones. Chris in Madison is with us. Hi, Chris.
Hi, good morning. Even though I'm a baby boomer, my high school was very early pioneer in teaching self-esteem as part of its core curriculum. And to this day, I'm proud to say that I graduated in the top 75% of my class.
Very good, Chris.
I have two nieces whom I love dearly, who are both in talented, gifted programs for most of their school careers. One's still in school. One of them went to college and thrived after searching around for a career, is thriving right now. And the other one recently got out of a suicide prevention clinic. Mm. And I think they're both tied to that. But the reason I called is that I think one of the real differences between those two is a sense of humor. And I think that there just seems to be such a declining sense of humor among people that when you talk in terms like, you know, my opening line, that to a lot of them, there's a deer in the headlights stare. And I don't know if there's any way of instilling a sense of humor, but I'd sure like to see more of one.
I think that's really interesting, Chris, and we'll get David to respond to it. But I wanted to make sure I understood your comparison of your nieces correctly. Did you say that both of their, one being in, you know, talented and gifted and well off, and the other coming out of a suicide prevention program, are tied to the same thing? What did you mean by that?
Well, they were both in talented and gifted programs. One couldn't handle the pressure, and that it's partly because the parents didn't give them the right perspective. I mean, I think the parents were saying, "You have to do this." It was really one of those cases where the parents are trying to realize their own potential through their kids,
yeah.
The potential that they never quite achieved.
And maybe the one was also seeing her sister excel, and she was struggling, and that caused problems too.
Well, actually, they were cousins,
okay.
So not quite that same.
Yeah. Well, what your thoughts on David on that on Chris's example of?
Well, I think Chris is absolutely right on the money. So much what's been lost is not just a sense of perspective about all this, but a sense of humor. People are taking themselves so seriously all the time. And as a consequence, they become phobic about any little wobble, much less failure, for fear that somebody's watching and will think less of them. It's terribly inhibiting. We need to take the pressure off kids to soar and just let them figure it out on their own and not have their self-esteem tied up in what other people think of them. It can be, you know, for the, I don't know, a select 5% or 8% or something like that, it can be a healthy environment and they can absolutely thrive. But for a lot of kids, it's simply exclusionary and they start stumbling along thinking they're lousy when in fact they're just fine.
Mm-hmm. So is there any way we can instill more of a sense of humor in our kids?
Yeah, I think we should require courses on Groucho Marx. Everybody read P.G. Woodhouse. I think a spirit of lightening up will go a long way. The stakes, for many kids, the stakes seem always enormously high. And it shouldn't be that way for kids in school. You know, school should be a nice place to experiment and figure things out and discover new interests or discover something that turns out not to be an interest at all. Instead of this this gauntlet kids have to run in order to impress college admissions officers.
Thank you so much, Chris. So Dee in Amory is with us now. Hi, Dee.
Hi, Joy. I'm a habitual caller.
Oh, well, we love having you call, Dee.
I have a similar story. My daughter was a jock in school. The last 2 years of high school was, you know, she was number one on every team she played. And the accolades were just out of this world. And we kept telling her, you know, it's not like that in the real world. But she just, you know, she just could not believe that. And she didn't do any of her own homework for the last 2 years of school. And when she got out into the real world, she wasn't number one anymore, and nobody cared that she pitched a no-hitter. And she had a whole year of really, really bad depression because she wasn't number one anywhere. And now she had to go back to school, and she is a registered nurse, and she's doing wonderful. But it was a really, really sad couple of years for her.
Yeah.
Life can be humbling, and kids need to know how to handle that. And they, you know, if they enjoy nothing but glowing success all the way along, when that inevitable struggle comes or that inevitable failure comes, it's going to be pretty jarring.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Dee, for the call. Let's go next to John in Neillsville. Hello, John.
Good morning. I'm calling because I have this comment on this whole issue. I've spent 40 years, not as a teacher, but as a pastor in a Lutheran school and things like that. And one thing I've noticed over the years is parents have become less and less willing to let their children suffer the consequences for their actions.
How so?
As they, you know, don't suffer for it, it's always somebody else's fault. They just don't learn responsibility. And it shows up, you know, worse later in life, too.
Yeah, dude, can you give us, I don't have to break any confidence or anything here, but an example of not letting their kids face the consequences? They just try to get them out of trouble if I don't know, they get caught underage drinking or something?
Well, fights on the playground, for example. You know, it's clear to all the other kids who started the fight and the teacher and so on, and when the child is, you know, caught in it and the parents are, you know, called in to... to talk to the parents about it. The parents just stick up for the child. My child didn't do that. It had to be somebody else, and so on. And the child learns it can get away with whatever it wants, and that's kind of that, I'm special kind of thing. You know, I don't get into trouble because I'm special. And that can have serious consequences later in life. You know, when they're little children, you know, the consequences are relatively small. Let them suffer them. It's better than the big consequences later in life for not learning, you know, responsibility.
Right. Well, you would agree with that, David?
I would, yeah. You know, when you intercede and prevent a child from experiencing an unhappy consequence, you're also denying the child a really important learning experience. And as John suggests, it's better those happen when they're young than when they've got real-life consequences to deal with.
Yeah. Well, look here. We have a high school student. Yay. Laurel in Wisconsin. All right, Laurel, hi. Where can you give us an idea of where you go to school?
I actually take college courses at the local state university.
Okay, and what do you think of this message? You are not special.
I completely agree with it. I was really, really lucky in that my parents really emphasized reading, and I had a brother to compete with for understanding in math and all of that stuff. And so I found it really, really fun to learn, but I saw a bunch of classmates, and I see it in my sister and all of my sister's friends who, when they don't do well at things, they aren't told, you're bad at this and you need to work harder. Instead, there's a message of, oh, good for you, you're taking your time, or people learn slowly, but that just means you're going to understand it better when you finally get it. And they really, I mean, emphasizing positivity is great and all, but I see a lot of kids who have actual problems or who aren't being told that they need to work harder on things, and they lose their effort, and they aren't trying to catch up when it counts because they're being told that it's completely normal and they're avoiding getting help.
David, your thoughts on that?
Hi. When I give my students a test now and then and a kid will complain that it's too hard, I always like to say, well, there's no such thing as a hard test, only insufficient preparation. So often kids, you know, who don't get playing time in the big game blame the coach.
If they do poorly on the test was unfair. If they, rather than looking at their own effort, they're very quick to cast blame or aspersion elsewhere. As Laurel suggests, it's important to just kind of man up and take responsibility and let the consequences be what they will. If you know you've done your best, then it really doesn't matter what the outcome is. But kids are so sensitive about outcomes, they're so eager to impress, that process is lost.
Yeah. Well, what is the responsibility then of a teacher who, to help students prepare for adulthood? I mean, if parents are saying it's okay if Johnny learns at a slower pace, should the teacher be saying, no, it's not?
Then one needs to take a good close look at Johnny's situation. Every teacher would like to be exactly the kind of teacher each of his or her students needs. That's often not possible. The kids need to feel supported. They need to feel that they and their concerns matter to the adults in their lives. And they also need to understand that their responsibilities are their own. Teachers are there to be helpful. Parents should be helpful. They shouldn't, though, assume responsibility for the child's success themselves. Let the kid earn it. And that way, when they do succeed, they'll feel all that much better, and their self-esteem will be based on real experience rather than a lot of hot air.
Yeah, I'm interested. Laurel is a high school student who is taking college courses at her local, University of Wisconsin a campus. So, Laurel, are you still there?
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe you are special.
I don't know. I think it's something that a lot of kids can handle. I would say more, not that I'm special, I'm just really, really antisocial.
If I might jump in for a second, Laurel is special. Everyone is special. That's sort of the whole point. All 7 billion of us is everybody matters. Everybody's important. When you start singling people out, when you start, and sometimes for pretty specious notions, when you start singling people out as special, it's not such a healthy situation. Everyone matters. Everyone is special, which then kind of nullifies the concept of specialness. It's right back to the if everybody gets a trophy, then trophies don't mean very much.
Yeah.
Everybody matters.
Yeah, but Laurel's attributing being very modest and saying that she's excelling academically because she's antisocial.
Well, Laurel, nerds win in the end anyway, so you persevere. Don't worry so much about it.
Honestly, the thing is, I am completely average in my grades. I just do well on standardized tests, but it's not that hard to push yourself or to go on and take higher courses. It doesn't require specialness. It just requires wanting to do something. And that's, I don't know, I feel like that's something a lot of people
have
lost.
That's the healthy way.
Drive.
Education should be no more about grades than fishing should be about the fish. Yes, it's nice to catch a fish, but really we enjoy fishing for the process. We enjoy fishing to be out in the world and pursuing something that matters. I don't know. Education should be no more about grades than skiing should be about being at the bottom of the hill. Enjoy what you're doing because you enjoy it and believe in it, and good outcomes will naturally follow if you're investing yourself.
So what do you want students to get out of their education ultimately?
A love of learning, confidence in themselves, and eagerness to do some good for everybody else. Kids, I hope, need to understand that of course, their education is for their own benefit, but it's also for the benefit of everyone who will come to rely on them later in life.
But what about, how can high school students approach finding the things that they want to do and ignore the pressure to get into some prestigious college if they're going to make something of themselves?
I can't speak for the admissions officers at prestigious colleges, but I'd like to guess that they're more interested in the kinds of students who love learning for its own sake, who are enthusiastic about physics or literature or history or all three, and not kids who are showing up trying to earn A's by any means necessary. Kids, first of all, it's the responsibility of teachers to be interesting and to make their own enthusiasm for their subject contagious. If that happens, then you know, an hour studying literature or physics or math or whatever it might be becomes a joy. And achievement will naturally follow if kids are invested in believing in what they're doing.
Thanks again, Laurel, for the call. We'll let you get back to your studies. We are talking with David McCullough Jr. He is the author of You Are Not Special and Other Encouragements. He is a longtime English teacher at Wellesley High School in Wellesley, Massachusetts. And this book is based on his 2012 commencement speech at the school in which he told students, "You are not special." He says that teenagers today are generally overscheduled and overparented and told to try too hard to be special, which he says they're not. Actually, he says everybody is special in their own right, and is encouraging kids to be themselves and to not be afraid to be average. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm wondering if you agree with our guests about what's causing this sense of entitlement among some kids. We wonder if what you would tell graduating high school students if given the chance. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with David McCullough Jr., author of You Are Not Special and Other Encouragements, meant for teenagers or those who care about teenagers. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Judy in Sauk City is with us next. Hello, Judy.
Hello. First of all, I totally do agree with the guest. I am a retired child care worker. I did this for a little over 30 years. And the thing I found taking care of children, I think this all starts at a very early age, in elementary school, kindergarten, and so on. What I found is that at first, if you participated and you won, you got a medal, so on and so forth. Well, nowadays, it seems like every child has to get an award for participating. And I think that not only does this hurt, I think this hurts everyone, because why try any harder? Because you're already special. You already are going to win no matter what. And I think that we're sending a really bad message. I think what we need to tell kids, it's okay not to win the medal. It's okay not to come in first place as long as you've tried your hardest, especially at the kindergarten, first, second, third grades. And I think this is a terrible injustice, and I think they're carrying it through right through high school. And every child is special in their own right, but we're all equal also. So I don't know if the guest agrees with that, but I would love to hear his comment. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I agree entirely. I think Judy's absolutely right. The kids need to do what they do because they think it's fun, not because they think it's going to get them a medal at the end of the season. Play soccer because you love soccer. I would suggest even that don't worry so much about the score on the scoreboard. Just play the game as best you can. And I think that metaphor applies to other aspects of life. Yeah. The moment we start praising kids, we run the risk of making it about the praise, instead of making it about the pleasure of an endeavor or the satisfaction of a job well done. And so one has to be, the adults responsible for these children have to be very careful about how we administer our praise, just like we need to be careful about how we criticize, too, because there's a big difference between helpful criticism and hurtful criticism. it's not easy raising children, but there's nothing more important. And so I think we need to be smart about it.
Let's go next to Dave in Menominee, Michigan. Hello, Dave.
Hi, good morning. I have a daughter graduating from the UW system this year and another, my youngest girl, graduating from high school. And I wanted to bring up stress. I know when I was in school, we had 8 minutes between classes. We didn't have to run around to get anywhere. It's trimmed down now to just over 3 minutes between classes, and I know my daughter was very upset that she couldn't take some of the classes because they were too much of a stretch between classes from one end of the school to the other because there just would not be enough time to get to the class. And they grouped all these kids together in one school, which really is an agitating thing. And I wanted to bring up the police, when I drop the kids off in the morning, the police are patrolling the area. There's, you know, 3-4 police cars patrolling the streets, in the alleys. I just can't imagine how it would have been if when I was in school, you know, how that would have made me feel. And I know it has to have some kind of effect. I wanted to get the professor's view on that.
Mm-hmm. A lot of stress on kids today that we didn't have.
A lot of stress on kids today that we didn't have. Absolutely. There's the stress to achieve and perform and to please the judgmental adults in one's life. There are little subtle things, like you point out with the police, that that kids are dealing with all the time. Rushing from class to class. I'm sitting in my classroom right now. The bell rang a moment ago, and kids go charging by with these 80-pound backpacks, and there's not enough time to say hello to a friend or go to the bathroom because they've got to get to the next class. And, you know, you go from, AP calculus down to French, and then from French to English, and from English to history, and each of those teachers has demands and expectations. And then the bell rings at 2:30, and you got to rush off to track practice or to piano recital. And the kids collapse at about 11 o'clock at night or 1 o'clock in the morning, and they've got to do it all again tomorrow. And they're being assessed and judged every step of the way. It's very difficult. And when we find them wobbling a bit, one of the ways we bolster them is to praise them up and down or to give them the cotton candy or sugar of a reward. And I'm not sure this is the best way to help kids prepare for what comes next or to enjoy fulfilling lives while they're in school.
Yeah. Should we be doing anything different about those, the 3 minutes in between classes, or is there any other structural things that should be done to allow kids to enjoy themselves and to love learning?
We're trying all the time, but you know, we can only have them here at Wellesley High School. They're here from 8:30 in the morning to 2:30 in the afternoon. They take 6 1-hour classes. They have to have a half an hour for lunch, and the only way to get all that in is to have 5 minutes between classes. Mm-hmm. It can make for a very frenzied day.
But you're also saying it's frenzied, but let the kids deal with that, and not mom and dad shouldn't swoop in to rescue them.
Yeah, and the other thing is that kids are often being shoved into courses. We have tiered classes here at Wellesley High School. There are the honors classes and the kind of normative in the middle classes, and then the less rigorous classes in the third tier. And kids are forever being shoved into higher classes than maybe their aptitude or attitude would deem appropriate, because they want to impress downstream admissions officers, and they operate with the idea that colleges prefer that you take a really ambitious schedule of courses. And so, once again, kids are staggering home with hours and hours and hours of difficult homework to deal with. And, you know, this isn't their idea of a rocking good time.
Barbara in Madison is with us now. Hello, Barbara.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I want to relate an incident that occurred when my son was in junior high. He entered the science fair, and I was very disappointed to learn he chose a category not because he loved it, but because there were only 3 entries, and he was sure he would get a ribbon or an award. Yeah. And he put off preparing for it till the night before the science fair, asked for my help, and I told him no. I said, had he asked earlier, I would have helped, but it was his problem, not mine. And I was so pleased when the judge had the courage to stand up and say nobody in that category deserved a ribbon. And I think it taught him a very valuable lesson.
Ooh, did he did he cry about that, Barbara? Or
yes, he did.
Yeah,
and he did not get sympathy.
Well, there we go. The judge was did the right thing, David.
Yeah, that's a great story. An old friend of mine told a very, he's no longer with us, but he told a very similar story. That he was entering a calf in the county fair, and he knew he had it won because his was the only calf entered at the county fair that year. And when he, after the judging was complete and he went to pick up his blue ribbon, he was stopped dead in his tracks when he discovered that the ribbon wasn't blue at all, but red. He came in second place. He said, how is this possible? And the judge says, well, that's not a blue ribbon calf. That's a red ribbon calf. And again, if you make the point, the accolade at the end, you're missing the point. The point is to invest of yourself because you're excited, because this is going to be cool, not because somebody's going to pat me on the back about it later.
Thank you very much, Barbara. Great example. Anne in Frankfort, Michigan. Hello, Anne.
Hi. I watched your guest speech, and I really, really appreciated it a lot. But he made it quite clear that he was talking to Wellesley students who were very privileged at all. I, as a former teacher, I've seen a lot of situations with lower income, mostly lower income families, where the presence of the parent is not very strong. And in terms of the child's academic life, they just kind of say, well, you know, that's all the teacher's responsibility, and they're just not very present. So my question is how your guest would apply his philosophy to situations like that.
As you point out, the speech I gave 2 years ago was delivered to a very specific audience of kids who've enjoyed privilege through most of their lives. Had I been speaking to a different audience, I would have had a much different message, I'm sure. Yeah, there are inequities everywhere, and seems to me that the quality of a civilization should be based not on the robustness of its economy or the strength of its military or the magnificence of its art. I think the strength of a civilization is how it raises its children. And I think we need to rethink across the board how that's happening in this country. Privileged kids are enjoying far too much of what's good, and kids from modest means are being left out, and it's just simply not, and not only is it not fair, it's not healthy for the civilization.
Well, what kind of adults do we hope teenagers today become? What traits do we want them to develop, or traits do we not want them to develop?
Are you asking me?
Yes.
Or the caller? I think they should be civically responsible. I think they should be self-confident and imaginative and caring. I think they should be hardworking. I think they should be humble. I think they should... I could go on and on.
Yeah.
Let's leave it at that.
Well, how do you approach your own teaching and parenting in an effort to help your kids, your students, become the adults you want them to become?
I try to be genuine with both my students and my own children always, to be candid and to let them know what I'm thinking and why. I try to encourage them to take responsibility for their own responsibilities and deal with the consequences as they come along. I must say that my own children and the students with whom I work, they're lovely people, and it's a joy to be with them. And so every morning I can't wait to have at it. And it's been going, knock on wood, quite well all the way along.
We have other caller Zach in Kenosha is with us now. Hi, Zach.
Hi. I just want to speak to the misunderstanding that kids have of the point of school itself. I was talking to my 10-year-old daughter the other day, and she said something to the effect of, oh, that doesn't matter, it's just art class. And I said, whoa, you know, what's the point of going to school? And she says, well, so I can get a really good job when I grow up. I said, well, here's the thing. Say you get the best job you could possibly, a perfect job. Well, now what? Now what do you do? Well, you enjoy art. You seek out art. You seek to do art. That's the point of everything. And you could see the light go on in her head that, hey, it's not just simply do this to get this. There is meaning to be achieved. So that's all I want to say. Thanks.
Yeah, maybe we're pushing too many students that the main point of education is to get a really good job.
Yeah, I see that all the time. And you know, Tuesday's class is about Friday's test, and Friday's test is about the report card at the end of the term, and the report card at the end of the term is about the GPA, and the GPA is about the application to college. Kids work hard in high school because they want to get into a good college, and they want to go to a good college, and good is just code for prestigious. And they want to go to a prestigious college so they get a, quote, good job, and to too many children, a good job is simply a high-paying job. And I keep asking, well, what about today? What about what's right in front of you at the moment? Why isn't this interesting and important on its own? I agree with Zach right down the line. It's important to enjoy what's in front of you and work hard for self-respect's sake and see what happens.
Yeah. Zach, does your daughter enjoy art class now?
She always has. She's always been prone to art. We come from a pretty artistic family. And so we do it, you know, as an activity at home, but she did not translate that to what goes on at school. She pictured school almost as like a board game. Do this to achieve this to get this. And we had to stop and go over it.
Well, I'm glad you were able to get that message to her. One more call. Steve in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Steve.
Wow, thank you for taking my call. I was just listening and I almost forgot my point, but...
And we almost are out of time, so if you could be really brief
about
it.
I'll do it very quickly. So when I was a kid, we would go play softball, and we'd have gloves, and we'd make up the rules. We'd play with a multi-age group, like, you know, older kids would make room for younger kids, and we'd just play softball. And we weren't that good, but we had a lot of fun. And now people are working so hard at softball, it's like a job, and they're not, I mean, you know, 12-year-olds play with 12-year-olds, 10-year-olds play with 10-year-olds. And it just seems like you don't see people out just playing softball anymore. It's all very structured, and there's almost as many adults there as kids making sure that every rule is followed perfectly. And then I wanted to just cut to one thing quickly. It's the regimentation that I think in our society where if you're a 12-year-old, you're with all the other 12-year-olds. And I wonder, as we get more into high school, if we should let that diverge a bit and let your natural age group be where you end up rather than you're 13, you're with a 13-year-old.
Thank you, Steve. We have less than a minute. A quick react to that, David?
When hearing him talk about softball, I was reminded of my own youth playing hockey over on Whiting's Pond out behind our house, where it was whoever showed up, we played. And some of us stunk and some were really good and we didn't care. And when the moon came up, we played in the moonlight. And now, you know, even our children's fun is supervised and assessed by adults all the time. No wonder they're getting a little squirrely.
Yeah. Well, we'll leave it there for now. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
David McCullough, Jr., author of You Are Not Special and Other Encouragements. Thanks to Christy Taylor and to Bill Martins for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.